Om Agnatavananda Sya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Sha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Prajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakandvitam Sha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Brindavaneshri Prishubhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Truvyascha Kripa Sindubhyevacha Patidanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shedwaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Nana Shastra Vicharanai Kanipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarino Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakaro Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajanan Nandena Samataliko Pande Rupa Sanatana Ragayago Shri Jiva Gopalago. Thus far we've gone over the preface, which deals with a brief introduction about Lord Chaitanya and Rupa Goswami, how Lord Chaitanya had instructed Rupa Goswami about the science of devotional service, and the definition of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In the introduction, the Mangalacharna prayers, which... Today is Bhakti Vidya Purnaswami's Vyas Pooj. You broke it.
Indian factor is there.
Indian factor, yes.
Someone's Vyasa Puja?
Bhakti Vidya Purnaswami. So the Mangalacharna prayers in the introduction deal with the purpose of what the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is about, as well as offering prayers and obeisances and offering benedictions. Then there is a brief summary of what the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is, and then an explanation of the Paribhasa Sutra, the main verse within the Nectar of Devotion, Anyabhilasita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dedavritam Anukul Yena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. And then in the first chapter, it goes over the six characteristics of pure devotional service, namely that it's all auspicious, it frees one from all sinful reactions, or it takes away all kinds of misery. It's rarely achieved. Those who are factually in devotional service or bhava bhakti, they deride even the conception of liberation. And it's the only means to attract Krishna, and it gives one unlimited or intense transcendental happiness. Now in chapter 2, it deals with the first stages of devotional service. And here Rupa Goswami starts with a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh. Well, not in this chapter. The three categories of devotional service which Sri Rupa Goswami describes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu are listed as devotional service in practice, devotional service in ecstasy, and devotional service in pure love of God. There are many subheadings in each of these categories. Generally, it is understood that in the category of devotional service and practice, there are two different qualities. So those are the two different characteristics, klesha, agni, and subhada. And devotional service and ecstasy has four qualities, because it has two more qualities, moksha, lagu, krit, and sudurlava. And devotional service and pure love of Godhead has six qualities, including Krishna Akarshini and Sundarananda V-shaped Atma. And now Rupa Goswami explains that a person is classified in devotional service according to their taste. Devotional service is not simply an intellectual activity. One is considered more advanced or less advanced according to one's attraction to hearing about Krishna. The more one is attracted to hear about Krishna, then the more one is considered advanced. And generally, devotional service is a continuum over many lifetimes. One generally comes to devotional service because one has performed devotional service previously. But if one is just beginning devotional service, then it's understood that it's because of the causeless mercy of a pure devotee. In any case, as explained here, devotional service is easier for one who has a natural taste for hearing about Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam than those who are too much interested in mental speculation and argumentative processes. Now, this chapter especially deals with devotional service in practice. In the beginning, of course, it deals with sadhana bhakti. And sadhana bhakti has two stages called vaidhi sadhana bhakti and raga nuga sadhana bhakti. I think generally what happens in our society, because we don't naturally have a taste for hearing about Krishna or even for chanting Hare Krishna, therefore generally we make things very complicated. Just like it was mentioned the other day, there is a new movement called the Utsaha. You heard of that? You heard of that? Yeah. It's not they used to have the Gopi Bhava Club in Los Angeles and other different movements. Because generally devotional service is too simple for most people to take seriously. Because it's such a simple process and we're so complicated, therefore we can't really believe that such a simple process could work. Therefore we don't try the simple process, we try everything else except for the simple process. For instance, if we simply chant Hare Krishna, then it's said that one can get all success. But it seems too easy for most people. Because I was talking to that Mataji, and she said that people are attracted to this new club because for so many years they've executed sadhana bhakti, but they didn't get any benefit from it, apparently. So they decided to try something else. And then she said that even some leaders within ISKCON, they've also seemed to be inattentive while they're chanting Hare Krishna, etc. So therefore, how can we expect, by the process that people are generally following, how can we accept or expect that we're going to make any progress? So better to try something different. I remember one time one of our original 11 gurus, he said, where do you get all the nectar from? In other words, he's trying to figure out, he thought, now I've become a guru, a spiritual master within ISKCON, therefore, according to the books, a guru has all the mystic powers and is situated in love of God. So therefore he thought, well, I must be situated in love of God because they appointed me guru. And therefore I must have all the mystic powers. Of course, he was joking with me a little bit about that. But he was wondering that if I'm so elevated, how come I'm not experiencing transcendental bliss? And therefore he tried chemicals in order to induce a higher state of consciousness. That didn't work either. No, it didn't work either. In any case, the point is, the process, if it's so simple, why don't people accept it and experience it? The real point is, Arjuna, he said in Bhagavad Gita, Chanchalam Himana Krishna Pramati Balava Dridam Tasyaham Nigrahamanye Vayur Iva Sadiskaram. That the mind is restless and unsteady and very easily disturbed, and to subdue it, it seems to be even more difficult than trying to control the wind. So our mind is generally disturbed. Why? Because we've been in the material world since time immemorial, and since then, we've simply been disturbing our minds, trying to figure out where to enjoy and how not to suffer. And we've been doing that since time immemorial, so to expect that immediately our minds are going to be very peaceful and satisfied and we're going to understand, that's not the process of devotional service. It's not possible, because all these doubts and desires, they're covering our consciousness, and because they're covering our consciousness, therefore we can't experience or perceive things properly. And because we've been striving in a certain direction since time immemorial, therefore we have a tendency to keep on going in the same direction. Vaidhi Sarana Bhakti is recommended duty. Of course, in the Western world, there's a problem with duty also because we're quite uncultured. People think that doing duty is very dry and you can't really get anything out of it. Basically, we've been brought up in an atheistic culture which doesn't really believe in any laws behind material nature, especially restraining or controlling or occupying the senses in something other than sense gratification. Therefore, we've been trained up since birth, practically speaking, that sense gratification is the goal of life and the only means to obtain real happiness. And if there is some other activity, it's simply a sentiment or illusion that some people have invented because they can't actually engage in the real activity, which is sense gratification. So with such a training, which reinforces our illusions that we're already in, it's very hard for us to accept the fact that we should actually be dutiful. As Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj is noting in class, duty means duty towards other people. It means that not that, for instance, in the Western world nowadays, or I guess all over the world, not only the Western world, I guess there's nothing but the Western world, practically speaking, that the idea is not so much duty as rights. Everyone wants their rights. But in the Vedic culture, it's not a question of rights, it's a question of duty. And if everyone does their duty, then automatically rights are taken into account. But if everyone is demanding their rights and no one's doing their duty, it won't work. Everyone wants something, but they don't want to give. Therefore, because the teachers don't know what their duty is, and they only want to do what they only get their rights. Rights mean some money or some pension or some permanent position on the staff. The managers, they don't know what their duty is. They only want their rights. They want the right to exploit the people as much as possible. The Vaishyas, they don't know what their duty is. They think they have a right to just make as much money as possible. And the Shudras, they just want to enjoy sense gratification. They don't know what their duty is either. So because no one does their duty, Therefore, there is no question of controlling the mind. Because there's no, practically speaking, the only restrictions that are imposed upon people are due to the fact, practically there are no restrictions. And if there are restrictions, it's only due to fear, generally. Fear of becoming put into a situation which is unpleasant. And the more people eliminate their duties, people think they're becoming free. So we have a situation, people think they have a right to kill their own child, they have a right to kill animals, now they have a right to kill people who are too diseased, and in the future people think that they have a right to kill the old people. Because no one really knows what their duty is. So here it says that Vaidhi Sarana Bhakti means to employ the senses or occupy the senses in Krishna conscious activities in order to invoke bhava. The whole idea of our activities is to invoke our natural love. So it's called devotional service in practice, but it's actually not really practiced because that love is just dormant. And that love is spontaneous. It's simply been covered over. So there's nothing really to practice. It's just a question of activities which will uncover that love. And then when it's manifested, then we're back in our original position again. Prabhupada gives the example of a child. A child apparently has to practice walking, but actually the walking propensity is already there. Just by a little practice, so-called practice, it walks. It learns to walk. And the other example that Prabhupada uses is that that under the spell of material nature, we're all said to be crazy. Prabhupada put out a little book at the beginning. It was called Who is Crazy? Practically speaking, we're all crazy. But the question is whether what the devotees are doing is that crazy or what everyone else is doing is crazy. Srila Prabhupada was very fond of pointing out that when he had one servant and he was in his chemical factory, and I think he had sold some medicine illegally, and Prabhupada was called in front of the court in order to face charges. And while he was in court, there was one doctor who was being tried. The doctor, he had a wife, and the wife was having an affair with his servant. So one day he called his servant into the operating room and chloroformed him. And then he performed an operation on the servant. He cut him up into little pieces. Put all the little pieces into a box. And he was taking the box out and the blood was dripping from the box. So a policeman arrested him. And he was being tried in court for murder. So he pleaded he had a barrister who was a European barrister, and he pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. And therefore the prosecution called an expert psychiatrist in order to testify. So the psychiatrist, he testified, "My dear judge, I've examined so many different patients since I've been a psychiatrist, and my judgment is that everyone is crazy. So if you want to excuse him, because he's also crazy, everyone's crazy. He's a person, so he must be crazy too. So on that basis, if you want to excuse him, you can do that." Prabhupada would always point this out as an example of that everyone is crazy. And he used the same example also because right after his client, the verdict came down that he'd be hung. And so his lawyer came over to him and said, "Don't worry, I'll get you free by appeal." So Prabhupada said, "This is the high